Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/atheistnomads. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's audibletrial.com/atheistnomads.
And the Lord was with Judah, and he took possession of the hill country. But he could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain, because they had chariots of iron.
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is our 28th episode. We are celebrating 1 year of podcasting. Woo-hoo. I am Dustin, and joining me as always is Wesley.
How you doing?
Now, before introducing our guests, I do want to say there is a reason why we started podcasting. If you go back, 3 years ago, I got my start in podcasting as a guest on Chariots of Iron. And they had me on a couple times as a guest, had me fill in a few times as a co-host while one of them was out. And then when their show kind of stopped, I felt
a hole.
I felt a hole in my listening feed. And it's like, you know what? Need to fill that. Who could I do a podcast with? And well, Wesley had already pestered his way onto my blog. So it's like, hey, Wesley, you want to do a podcast? And
I was like, sure, what the hell? I'm not doing anything else.
Yeah. So we started podcasting. Yeah. But if you really want to look at why we got started, why there is an Atheist Nomads, it is because of Chariots of Iron. Without Damn Chariots Skipper. Of Iron, there would be no Atheist Nomads. And it just seems very fitting that joining us for our first anniversary episode are my friends, Eli and Lamar. Gentlemen, welcome to Atheist Nomads.
Hey, how you doing? And if you don't recognize the voice, this is Eli. I know, I'm sure you have listeners that have never, ever heard of Chariots of Iron. Like, who the fuck are these two? Right. So I'm Eli.
And I'm Lamar.
Yeah, Lamar sounds like he's broadcasting from an old coffee can in an alleyway. And that's probably true.
It is, actually.
So We've fallen on hard times since Chariots of Iron.
Oh, man. And, okay, last episode you guys released was, what, about a year and a half ago now?
Man, has it been that long?
I believe it's been about that long. Wow. We had those few failed attempts where you guys were trying to get me to help you out, and then those ended up failing. And
never released. We had you on an episode that I think never came out that was recorded, I believe, February
yeah.
of 2012.
Yeah, there's one in January as well. It was just Eli and I.
Yeah, none of those made it. The last four, I think, never made it. Which is
wow, just suck.
Well, okay. That's how much we suck.
No, it's one of those things. A podcast takes a lot of time. You know, there's the effort that goes into preparing material for it. There's the effort, well, at least unless you want to just sound like a complete jackass. And then there's the production side of it, doing the editing and releasing of it. And that is a huge time commitment. And
that's why we sounded like jackasses so often.
No, it's a huge commitment. It really is. I don't think a lot of people appreciate what all goes into it. And unless somebody's really streamlined it and made it slick, because that's really a lot of work. If you want to put out a quality product and you want it to be listenable, I mean, this is something that somebody's going to listen to in their iPod on the bus to work and shit like that. And so you want it to sound at least somewhat polished. And that's hard to make happen. That's difficult.
Especially with amateur equipment and amateur skills.
Exactly. And it's the amateur skills that you have to use the amateur equipment to compensate. Because what would happen is if you didn't edit this show, the very show we're making right now, if you didn't edit this to something that's listenable, it's just going to be four dicks sitting around gabbing about shit, you know, and nothing's really going to pop out of that until you're done editing. And then the awkward pauses and stepping over each other vocally, because we're all on mics, we're all in different locations. Right.
Yeah.
So, so it's actually hard to coordinate a conversation, and then when you go in and edit, it's very difficult to make it sound more natural, like we were all in the same room.
Yeah, I'll never forget the very first Chariots of Iron. I was editing it, and you know, I was trying to tighten things up, and you know, I sent like my first draft out to Lamar, and this is back when Joe was on the show, and you know, they kind of liked where it was going. But then I thought I wasn't good enough, so I tightened it up more and more and more, and it got weird, and and so we ended up actually going back to my first draft of the editing that was a little bit less severe because
I remember that.
I've heard a horror story about the first time Dustin was on, and he gave you like a 10-page rough draft of what he wanted to talk about.
And I think we got to like half a page of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember I was having conversations with Dustin at the time, you know, we're talking over the phone over this, and he said, I saw the draft, and my first response, like, you know, if you want to do this over multiple shows or something, we can have you back. I mean, this is a lot of stuff. Because it was Dustin's whole, like, here's the beginning, from beginning to end, my experience as a Seventh-day Adventist and how fucked up that is.
Yeah.
And then
the history of the Adventist Church.
The history of the Adventist Church, he was going into great details about the theology and all this other stuff. It's all really interesting shit, right? But you would have to honestly dedicate a podcast, not an episode, a podcast to talking about the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Like, it would take that much. And but we had him on, and when he was on, things loosened up. And he was kind of just part of the conversation, and he realized after, I guess, you know, just jabber-jawing with us that, okay, just loosen up, just hit a few points, and we don't have to take this as, you know, too seriously, and we'll just, you know, have a little fun with it. But he did come back. You came back several times.
Yeah.
Just on the Apatis stuff, before we even had you, you know, as a sit-in, we had you back, like, I guess we did three or four episodes on...
It was three.
Apatis. Was it three?
Yeah.
Before we even had you, we knew your name. God.
Well, that sounded stalkerish.
They knew my name because the first episode I listened to was of Chariots of Iron was Seventh-day Adventists.
Yes.
And the question was asked without any answer, where does the...
That was back when Joe named our episode.
It was, oh, shit. The question was...
Seventh-day Adventists.
Where did the 1,260 years come from? And so I sent a very lengthy answer as to where that all comes from.
Yeah, that was from that pamphlet my dad got dropped on his doorstep one day. I was like, oh, let me take this. This seems like good material.
What was that, the Sunday Law or something like
that? Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that's a classic.
It's more like a book than a pamphlet. I was like, there's some money going into publishing these things.
And the author is horrible. Was that just some bad writing or what?
Well, that's what happens when your church owns several publishing houses.
Yeah, the woman that wrote that, she was esteemed as some prophetess of the church or something like that?
Yes, Ellen G. White.
Yes, yeah, she was what we would call in the modern vernacular, certifiably insane.
Yes.
See, I don't even get any of these cool pamphlets like that. I mean, all I get is this, the Watchtower, but written in Spanish.
Yeah. Well, Ellen White, she wasn't just insane. She was actually brain damaged. When she was, I think it was 9 years old, might have been 11 years old. It was one of those odd numbered years, as you know, it would have been elementary school. A classmate hit her in the head with a rather sizable rock. And she was in a coma for several days. Her eyesight never fully recovered. That would have done serious brain damage, especially prior to the advent of modern medicine. Mm-hmm. And then after the Great Disappointment, she started having visions. And you add some emotional, you know, fear and just agony to brain damage, and the end result is a prophet.
Which could probably explain most prophets, actually. Mm-hmm. Something along those lines. I just read the book of Ezekiel, you know?
Yes, that man was nuts. And John, not only insane, but barely literate.
Well, depends on the John that we're talking about. Now, it's the same John attributed to all of those books in the New Testament, but we're talking about Revelation John, aren't we?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that guy. Whoever did that was honestly nutters. That shit is crazy pants, man.
Now, quite possibly the same person as who did... with all the Johannine texts, they do have a very common theme, and that is horrible grammar and vocabulary.
Is that true for the epistles as well?
The Pauline epistles are actually very well written. Others.
I mean
the Johannine epistles, yes.
Oh, okay.
It is, yeah, they were written by somebody barely literate. The text attributed to Luke and the Petrine epistles in particular, very well written by somebody who actually knew their Greek. But the Johannine text, yeah, bad. A lot of the differences in translations is just because you can't tell. Missing word endings or missing prepositions or various connecting words that you would really need to make sense of it, and it's just not there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we have digressed way too far.
A common theme on the Chariots of Iron podcast.
And on ours.
Excellent. We're in good company.
We actually modeled, I modeled the format of the show largely after Chariots of Iron. We tweaked it quite a bit from there, but that was the kind of the starting outline.
It's completely like yours, except it's different.
Yeah.
Have you done a second episode of the Bible Science Game Show? That was my favorite episode. I loved doing that episode. That one was so much fun.
No, we haven't done that yet.
Oh man, that's a theme that has to continue.
I think that Dustin has something that neither of us have, and that is a complete...
charisma.
Oh, well, I don't have that.
What?
What?
I think he has a complete collection of the recording.
I do too, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of us do. I know Eli does.
No shit.
And I do not. I do not.
I admit, wow. I had to download them off that guy that has them all stored on his SkyDrive, but
there's a guy with a SkyDrive that's distributing. That's awesome.
I thought they put up a torrent of them all too.
The torrent also
didn't work well.
On the Facebook group, there's a few pages down. There's a link that goes to this guy's SkyDrive, and they're all up there.
Oh wow, that's cool. I should pop in just to thank him and apologize for that promise of the last episode that never came. I was in conversation with Joe, and I thought I was going to be able to work that out, and it just never came to fruition. You know, I was going to have Joe, and I'd already talked to Eli, and he was down with it, and but none of that shit ever came out. I just couldn't coordinate everything. So, and I could barely coordinate myself too. I don't want to blame this all on Joe and Eli. A lot of this week.
Oh, blame it on me. I'm a schmuck.
Well, it was difficult getting all three of us to get to do it. We all have crazy shit going.
Yeah. Well, now Lamar and I work for the same company, and he knows what kind of craziness I'm involved in.
it can get pretty crazy.
Well, next time somebody gives you guys shit for not having that final episode, just point them to this one.
There you go.
Yeah,
the honorary last episode of Chariots of Fire.
Oh, and we have an episode title.
There you go. Atheist Nomads episode 28, Chariots of Iron episode, what were we on?
High 90s.
Was it?
It was 70s.
70s?
Yeah, I can pull it up since I have the full archive.
It's only in the 90s if you count the episodes we scrapped.
Yeah.
You know, the first one, what's funny is we scrapped episode 13. This will also be.
Yeah. I thought you scrapped that one like twice also.
We didn't record twice for episode 13. We just scrapped episode 13 because it was just horrible. It was awful. We all sounded terrible. Everything. I mean, not the recording wasn't bad. The fucking show sucked. It was god awful. It was just shit. The show was absolute goddamn. It was just shit. So we had to like just fuck that show, man. We have to fucking burn it. And we came to the episode 13, right? So we wanted to play into the whole unlucky number 13. So we skipped it. We skipped the episode number and just went from 12 to 14. And we were silent about it for like a year. and people would write to us, you know, and like, oh, God, are you superstitious and all this shit? We would not even respond. We would just ignore it because that would help fan the flames for. Because we were thinking, like, at some point, okay, there's going to be some fans out there. There already were crazy fans after 1 year, right? And there were going to be some fans out there that were just going to fucking drool over the shittiest fucking show you could ever make. Like, I thought, if we put that out, these guys. And it's because, like, imagine if you found out that whoever recorded, so, you know, any show that you like, you would want to hear the shitty one too.
Mm-hmm.
You just to check it out, you know, just to check it out. So we thought, you know, okay, like maybe for our 100th episode or something, we'll bundle that with it. Or I don't know. We came up with something. Maybe we even released it. I have no fucking idea. I can't remember.
No, we never released it.
Well, I was drinking anyway. I wouldn't have known.
you know, we spent a lot of money on equipment and stuff. So we had like the, I think we had like the bright idea. Joe was always trying to get us to make money. So we had like the bright idea that we were going to like sell like a collection. We'd throw 13, you know, this horrible shit show as like the bait to get people to buy the DVD or something. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Some bright idea, you know.
Right.
Oh, man. Yeah, we were marketing geniuses.
Well, at the same time, I mean, we weren't on that program. I mean, Eli and I were neither. Neither of us were really on the program. I don't think you can make money. I mean, that's one thing. If you could really, honest to God, monetize this, maybe I'd be on board, but I don't think you can. So trying to monetize a podcast like this kind of just comes off as, like, a little cheesy. I mean, we had the whole silly Amazon sponsorship, which, by the way, Eli, your half is $15. I haven't.
Well, we actually made $1. We made more than $1.
We made like $30 over the course of 3.5 years.
The last you told me, we had like 76 cents in that.
So that was after the first like 3 weeks, I think.
Okay.
Like, we racked it up, buddy. We sold a book.
A book.
So you can't really monetize this stuff. We wanted to give it away. We were really about, and so was Joe. I mean, Joe was an activist too. I don't want to say like, well, nobody does this to get rich. I think Joe's point was like, if you can pay for the shit that we already paid for and come off with something on top, at least like drinking money, might as well do it. But we were just never part of the program.
Well, at the very least, try to get it to the point where the podcast supports itself.
You know, I've at least used our Amazon click-through to buy a laptop and a whole bunch of sex toys. So I've donated to the show.
Yeah, we got about $100 off of Amazon, 90 of which was Wesley. $5 over PayPal, which is a good opportunity. Well, if you want to help,
you can see what was purchased.
Yep.
Yep. Just not who purchased it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So Wesley's going anonymous.
87 fleshlights. Who? Who buys 87?
My stuff plugs in.
Yeah, you only need the one.
You know what, Eli? When you said that, I'm picturing Wesley with a fleshlight habit that's like your vaping habit. Like he's got the base. You know, he's got like different heads you can pop on there. He's got like different colors, different materials, and weird shit going on. This is the tentacle rape fleshlight. You know, shit like that. I'm just picturing Wesley just going crazy sicko with fleshlights.
I'm just wondering how you know all this stuff exists.
I'm from the internet.
All right, fair enough.
Oh, and the funny thing is, Wesley's not the one that owns a fleshlight. I am.
That's awesome.
I mean, I spent a year and a half in Japan. I know what the good shit looks like. You don't have to be from the internet if you've been there.
I spent 5 minutes on our space sticks, and I know more than I ever wanted to. So
yeah, that's the end of the internet right there.
Oh no, that's slash B. Yeah,
the B cards.
Hey, right there with you.
Oh fuck. Okay, now since they were talking about monetizing the show, I do want to definitely throw out there, if you like Atheist Nomads and you want to help support what we do, feel free to donate money or click through from Amazon or subscribe to audible.com and help us pay for the server.
Yes, do donate. It's a good thing to donate. I've given a few pennies here and there. Well, a few pennies. I've given like 50, 60 bucks, I think, to like various podcasts.
You know, I got to say, doing the podcast, you know, we got a couple donations and we got some stuff like that, but some of the best stuff we got, in my opinion, doing the show was some of the handicrafts, because we had a knitting circle.
Oh, I'm still jealous about that and the hats you guys got.
We got hats, we got scarves, I have a hand-knit flying spaghetti monster. I still keep all this stuff. I still have it. It's like mementos of the show. I have the Chariots of Iron stained glass. I have the Chariot. I think it was made by the same guy who made the stained glass, actually.
Yes.
And, I mean,
his name was also Dustin.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I remember you saying, from Dustin. Wait, well, not the Dustin you've heard on the show. A different Dustin.
I hope he's listening right now. If he is, this, you know, props to this guy. He's actually a really good craftsman, and he makes neat stuff. I mean, this was really cool. And he had a blog up, right? And he showed
the Chariot.
Yeah, he showed the process of making the Chariot, and that was brilliant.
Oh, nice.
And I'm
not going to remember the URL, though.
I play miniature war games, so I love the Chariot. It's a great like piece. It gets use, actually. It's like, oh, this is cool. I can put this on the battlefield. So
I know. What the hell could somebody do for a nomad? A chariot. There's something for a chariot, but
I don't know. We're
a Bedouin on a camel?
Yes. Yes.
Heck, all of our artwork has a picture from Petra. The Middle East definitely fits. When I think nomad, I think Bedouins. Now, of course, I am biased since I have been to Bedouin camps and learned a fair amount about Bedouin culture, but yeah.
Really, I just drove by them in an armored vehicle. It's been my experience with Bedouins.
I went inside their tents and drank tea.
Mm. Oh. Mm.
Yes, that's what you do when you do archaeology. You drink tea.
Tea, pinky out.
All right, this has been the longest intro ever, so let's save something.
Well, that was just the intro. You actually have questions?
We actually want to have you guys on for all the news as well.
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do some news.
Before we get to the news, though, there's still more things. You can follow along in the outline that I shared with each of you. I see that Lamar has it open. Eli, you are slacking.
I got it right here.
Ah, there you go.
There we go.
All right, now everybody's got it.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
We have gotten a lot of feedback. Having Jay Novella on the show was awesome for episode 26. And then when he plugged us on the SGU, I was in Las Vegas. I saw our numbers like double almost overnight. We had finally got up to about 1,300 listeners right before that. It's looking like we're now at about 2,500, 3,000 listeners.
Wow.
Jay, thank you very much.
They're big, yeah.
Yes.
Skeptics Guide University. That's kind of a big one.
With Jay coming on and a lot of new listeners, one thing I did find is the SGU listeners, and welcome all of you that have come over from the SGU. You guys are much more talkative than our old listeners, so thank you. Thank you very much for that. One message we got before we got all those was from Amy. You talked about needing to be a lawyer to be elected. You don't even need that. Oklahoma has a representative in the U.S. Congress who is a plumber. No college degree, just ran his father's, not even his own, plumbing company. You can tell when he talks. Yes, that was mean, but he's not very articulate. Amy, we never said you have to be a lawyer, but it definitely helps.
Well, I mean, Ron Paul is a doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some sort, some stripe.
Yeah. When I was dropping out of the seminary, one of the things I was trying to figure out what to do for a living. And I still wanted to make a difference in the world. And at that point, I was thinking politics would be the route to go. I definitely have my doubts about that now. But at that time, that was the route I was wanting to go. And I did some research. I was looking at various elected officials and how they got into office. And what I saw is, by and large, if you have a law degree, you can go straight into the U.S. Congress. If you start with a business degree, you have to work your way through the state legislature and then on up. Mm. And so if you want to go quick, lawyer will get you fast-tracked. Mm. If you do anything else, you will likely have to work your way up from the bottom.
I know Al Franken had to be a writer and on TV for decades. Decades. Before landing a seat in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm banking on podcasting.
I don't think that's going to work.
No. Yeah, we got some kudos from John, who came over from the SGU. Peter, great episode. First Norwegian fan. To our knowledge, yes. We've got Misa from Finland, but as far as we know, you are our first Norwegian fan.
We also got Sean from the Cork Skeptics and Cork Atheist Ireland group. He was a pretty cool guy to talk with a bit.
Oh.
Travis from the Sacramento Freethinkers and Nonbelievers, the fan group. We've actually emailed back and forth a few times. He seems like a pretty decent dude. Last shout out that I wanted to give was Lindsay down from, well, way the fuck down south. But she seems like a sweetie, so I hope she sticks around too.
That's where you're going to find your most dedicated listeners are southern and midwestern states that have, that these are people that are kind of on the front lines of the battle between, you know, religion and modernity.
Mm-hmm.
And good and evil.
Yeah, sure. Good and evil. But these are folks who, I mean, if you live in a southern state or if you live in the Midwest, places like Kansas or Oklahoma, you're going to be dealing with, you know, the crazies trying to, you know, shut down clinics, Planned Parenthood. They're going to keep trying to push creationism in a public school. And you're dealing with a lot of that crap because it's way more open and public and out there than it is in the rest of the country, like on the West Coast or in the Northeast, where they don't deal with that shit as much. I mean, the religious people are there, obviously, and the religious people are still the majority, but they're not as much. I mean, they're just not.
Yeah. And then for episode 27 with Susan Gerbic, we got awesome interview. I especially like the explanation of the Stop Sylvia page. Keep up the good work, guys. That was from Pat. And Michelle loved it. Gotta love that. I just had to read that one. I'm not a big fan of reading awesome kudos, but I had a very rough day at work today, and this wine is oh so good. And we also got some hate mail.
Awesome.
Yes. Did you miss
that? Man, we never got hate mail. It sucked.
I didn't fucking see the hate mail.
What well, kind of. At least the first criticism. And both of these had to do with YouTube. There was some jackass commenter on YouTube who called me the master mispronouncer.
Okay, but that's true.
I don't give a fuck. If you listen to this show, you know that I will mispronounce things. And the only example he used was fucking bullshit. It was Canada Arm, which I've been to Canada and heard them bragging about it at science museums, at aerospace museums, calling it the Canada Arm. I've never heard it pronounced Canada Darm. So
it might have actually been me saying Canada Arm.
It was Canadarm is the way it was typed up.
Oh, screw him.
Actually, and, isn't there some French influence so you don't pronounce the last letter, so it's Canada Dar? I don't know.
Whatever.
The way I've always heard it was Canada Arm.
I've been quiet for too long and had to say something.
Yeah, so that guy, you can just fuck off. Yeah. Anyway, if you want to correct my pronunciation, then give me decent examples and make sure that you're not just talking about regional differences. English is a very dialectical language, and make sure that it's not just that I'm pronouncing it the way it's pronounced where I live and you're pronouncing it how it is it where you live.
Yeah, eh?
And if you don't like that, yeah. Anyway.
That's right, eh?
And then there was somebody who was a... Oh, and just definitely have to do this with Eli Lamar here. Starts up, sup yos, I'm just some atheist from Portland, Oregon, and as such was a huge fan of Chariots of Iron. I've been aware of Atheist Nomad since COI came to its long, painful, overly drawn-out end. Please see Return of the King / Joan Rivers. And then he rambles on for a bit before finally getting to his point. He thinks our quality is horrible and that we are do a very poor job of it based on our early episodes, which I will admit sucked ass, and YouTube, the live episodes.
Let me, I take umbrage at the Joan Rivers comment because Joan Rivers is still going strong
and making money.
Yes.
And Chariots of Iron has dropped completely off the planet.
Well, I don't know why you diss the quality of this show because God, the quality of ours is awful. Honest to God, I'm going to let anybody, all of these new listeners that came over from Skeptic's Guide listening to this show right now and hearing about this Chariots of Iron show for the first time, do not fucking listen to it. It is shit. It is complete shit. And it's mostly me saying it's shit. And it's Eli saying, you're right, this is shit. And then eventually we had to put that shit to sleep. It is terrible, terrible stuff. But apparently there's a few people out there with torrents of it. The site is locked.
Yeah.
I still have the domain. I'm probably going to put pictures of my dick up. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no idea what I'm going to do with that domain yet. So.
They'll be very small photographs.
Yeah, very, it's all thumbnails. You're clicking it, and it's like, it doesn't get bigger.
Holy
no,
shit.
I honestly, I may at some point do something with that site. But I would have to get my hands on all the old. Because, like I told you before we started recording, I don't have any of them.
Looking, I have none of them. I have what was on that torrent, and looking at it, it is not complete. I have show notes for episodes that aren't in that collection.
Oh, God.
That I recorded with you.
Yeah, but we didn't air them, so.
72 was in 2011, and I think all the ones from 2011 were recorded.
That's probably true.
So it's missing those last couple of episodes.
Okay.
I think. So, otherwise it ended at 69, and I really remember it getting into the 70s.
I think so, probably, yes. If it's, God, yeah, there were four. The last four we did not release. But I think we did get into them. I don't know. What do I know? I was drunk. I have no idea. I'm just talking like I was there. I was barely.
There was that one in April 2011 where we interviewed Bob Price, and I was higher than a kite.
Oh, yeah, on medication.
I was on Norco.
I remember that episode very, very well because I was in a hospital when you guys were recording that.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With my daughter, and I never listened to the episode. It's like we were talking about getting Bob Price on the show since we started the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finally get him on and I can't do the show. And then I never bother to go back and listen to it.
Oh, and by the way, once you get in contact with Robert Price, he's actually very agreeable to come on the show, and he'll go on anybody's show. He's gone on shows shittier than ours.
Went on our show.
Yeah, he's been on ours.
Yeah, and I didn't even know there were shows shittier than ours, but he's been on shows shittier than ours. But it was getting that first contact. He used to have a guy that screened his mail a long time ago, and I tried to get through that way, and I got an email back from the guy that screened his mail, and then nothing ever happened. So anyway, Bob Price was actually very agreeable to come on the show, but I had a hard time getting in touch with him. We even tried through, I don't know if anybody's still using Atheist Nexus.
Hmm.
Do you?
Yeah, a few people. I still go there occasionally.
I run in a very active group on it still.
Okay, cool. That is awesome.
The Seventh-day Atheist group.
Well, good. I'm glad it's still in use. I tried to contact Bob Price through there, and that was absolutely hopeless. But I think that he's the kind of person, he doesn't use technology. Or at least didn't, or was a very slow to building up to it. He does podcasting and stuff, but I think he used to have a lackey that I couldn't get past the lackey.
let's bring it back around to this last bit of feedback from Lawrence about the quality on YouTube. Yeah, YouTube, you get the live experience. The live experience is very rough. Yes, I do a really sloppy job of editing, but at least I do some editing. And When we do those live episodes on a Hangout on Air, it's for our actual listeners who want to get the behind the scenes experience. So maybe, you know, we'll definitely look at various options such as, well, A, not doing it or only doing it on special occasions, or maybe just doing it, but not actually allowing it to be released on YouTube. So if you want to watch live, you can watch live, but you can't actually get it after the fact.
Well, I know Lindsay and a few of my friends sure want to get in on that on live shows, odd, but whatever.
You get the news right then and there, and you can provide live feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was awesome on episode 25. Getting live feedback from Finland was fucking awesome. Yeah. And it was like we had Sam on the show again.
And by feedback, we mean just talking shit, but it was still fun.
Right.
Right. I would offer to be on one of these live shows, but I think the world could not handle that many women creaming their jeans at the same time seeing my face on YouTube.
I think that wraps up feedback. So, Wesley, are you ready to take this day in history?
Oh, sure. This day in history, May 30th, 1431, Joan of Arc is martyred. 19-year-old lady, you know, seeing visions and... Well, got burned on the cross, wasn't she?
I think she was burned at the stake.
Stake. Yeah, okay.
They wouldn't burn a heretic on a cross.
Okay.
Well, they did once. Well, they nailed him. I mean, burn, nail, whatever.
That was the Romans, not the Roman Inquisition. That was the
Inquisition.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Sure. And by Roman, I mean Roman Catholic. Yeah. Anyway, carry on, Wesley.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah, I don't really care about her, I'll be honest. Okay. Anyways, this day in history, 1806, Andrew Jackson wins a duel. So previous to him being a president, Andrew Jackson actually was kind of a badass. He was, Charles Dickens, he was a lawyer in the around where Andrew lived, and he was actually talking shit about Jackson's wife, Rachel, slandered them as being a bigamist, and also a legal heir in the divorce from her first husband. That kind of set Jackson off. Apparently, Dickinson was a really notable duelist, but Jackson, well, his military expertise won out, and Jackson kicked his ass and shot him through the breast, and poor guy died a few days later.
You know, everything I ever read about Andrew Jackson makes him sound like a complete asshole. Like, this is not somebody I would go drink. Like, this is, because I know that I'm going to get in a fucking fight. You know what I mean? Like, have you ever had that friend that you would go to a bar with, and you just know that the minute they open their mouth, you're either in a fight or you just might as well leave now?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's Andrew Jackson. That's what I think of this guy. He's so hot-headed.
Yeah, he's that dickish friend that nobody wants to hang out with, but seems to bring the life to the party.
Jackson was a bit of a badass, but he was no Aaron Burr. That's all I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, that is fair. There. Okay. Clarified. Appreciate it.
Come on. Eli, I have missed you.
Aaron Burr shot a guy so bad, his face ended up on the $10 bill.
Fucking A.
Booyah.
Yeah.
Booyah. Yeah. Drop the mic. Drop all the mics.
Why Hamilton wasn't ever president.
Got a burr in his ass. I don't know.
Oh. This day in history, 1922, former President Taft dedicates the Lincoln Memorial. So Taft was actually a pretty decent, interesting guy to me. He's the only president to serve, the only person to ever serve as both president and a chief justice of the United States. As a Republican, he was kind of cool, kind of trust busting, tried to do some civil service reform, improving the performance of the fucking postal service. And the one that a lot of people don't really understand and or like, the passage of the 16th Amendment, which kind of says they can collect income tax.
Well, this is before Republicans became complete turds. This is before the political pendulum swung.
Right.
So
yeah, Republicans were still the liberals at that point.
Yeah, they were exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this dude was actually kind of decent. He was helping to develop economic stability in Latin America and Asia through a program called Dollar Diplomacy, and even showed a lot of restraint in not trying to fuck with Mexico during their revolution.
Right.
Unlike what we do now.
And apparently he was a complicated man who no one understood but his woman. Oh, wait, that's Shaft. Sorry.
Oh, boy. He's in rare form today, is he not?
Damn!
I was never like this on my own show.
Eli, you've been holding back.
Failed.
No, you've just been bottling up a year's worth of snide comments.
Oh my god! You know, if anybody listening's never heard Chariots of Iron, and you go listen to it now, you'll be disappointed. It because Eli played the straight guy. Eli was the straight guy. He was the one always telling me to keep shit together. Or me and Joe, like, God, will you guys fucking get your shit? God damn it. We don't want to run on 3 hours rambling about some stupid shit. And honest to God, like, it was like a babysitter running around corralling toddlers. So that was Eli's job. And now he gets to let loose because it's somebody else's problem.
This day in history, 1971, Mariner 9 departs for Mars. So it was about a 6-month flight there. The damn little spacecraft was like half a ton. It was a small little tiny thing. Mm-hmm. Got there in like mid-November of 71, but fucking Mars had a big ass storm for like a month, so they couldn't even get any pictures. But once the storm cleared, they got almost like 10 months of pictures, and it's the first time we ever really saw the red planet up close. So kind of cool. But I don't know if it actually died or like fell to the surface, but it stopped transmission on October 27th of 72. So hooray for science.
And also in recent news, well, that's not really recent news, but in more recent news from Mars.
It's recent in a geological.
Geological time. Opportunity rover? Yeah, Opportunity rover has set a U.S. off-planet distance record.
Ow.
Still has a ways to go to beat the international off-world record that the Soviets still hold. Was that?
But not very far. It doesn't have very far to go, does it?
No. Another kilometer or so.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Get moving, little rover.
All right. And the final story of the day. This day in history, 2008, Sex in the City movie is released. People around the world discover the sound of one hand clapping because nobody gives a fuck. All right,
you know,
that's it.
True fact, that's the movie that gave Roger Ebert cancer. Too soon?
No. So not too soon.
Not too soon, but conspiracy theory.
Dropping the science.
Dropping the bombs.
And you heard it first here on Atheist Nomads. Oh, fuck.
Seriously, honestly, right now he's saying all the shit he wished he'd said. he's been bottled up and now it's just blowing out.
That must stay in.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right, that's all I got.
Let's move on to science and technology.
Yay.
We have a robot back in our news. We for a while there, we had a robot in every episode, and then
I
stopped finding good robots. Well, one
you weren't looking hard enough.
I know. I got busy. Anyway, so MIT has produced a robotic bartender. This was for the Google I/O conference recently, and they had a smartphone app that would send it to the Maker Shaker. This is a three-armed robot designed specifically to mix drinks for the I/O conference.
I see what they're doing. Gain our trust.
Yes.
Next stop, destroy all humans.
Now, if you look at the pictures, they've
You're
got
giving them access
cameras
to our food sources, man. It's not a good idea.
Oh, just wait for the next article.
All right.
So, yes, I am loving this because so often you go to a bar and if you just want a fucking beer, you wait in line behind all those people where the bartenders have to mix up their fancy drinks. Now they can give it to a robot.
And you don't need to tip a robot. That's the great thing.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
And this would be
I kind of feel like a jackass. I'm a neat whiskey drinker. So I'm basically asking a bartender to open a bottle and put the liquid in a glass.
Hey,
and then I'm supposed to tip like $5.
Eli, when they take over, the shitty tippers are going first, buddy. So.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, man. This would be the perfect opportunity for that soundbite I've been wanting to snag from South Park of, they took our gerbs.
They took our gerbs. I do love that episode. Actually, that would be a shitty job to take, wouldn't it? take that away from college students. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, I can't. Are you kidding me? I can't even fucking tend bar anymore.
Come on, there's a lot of good tips in bartending. I mean, if you want a shitty job, you could always be a jizz mopper.
Now that is a shitty job.
Oh wow!
In a previous life, I was a line cook, and I remember one time I was on a break on my shift. I'm out back in the alley having a cigarette, right? And the bartender comes back there, and he's bitching. He's legitimately bitching that he only made X number of dollars in tips. I'm not going to give the exact amount. But the amount that he'd only made, this was like the previous night, was the same amount I made for a whole week working on that line.
Yeah.
God damn.
Bartending's actually a pretty good paying job if you're working a swanky upscale bar that gets a lot of foot traffic.
All right. Next up, NASA has given a $125,000 grant to a research company that is working on producing 3D printable food.
Okay.
Systems and Materials Research Corporation is working on this system that can use shelf-stable cartridges of sugars, complex carbs, and protein with a shelf life of 30 years and use the extruders to print food. Their demonstration model printed chocolate onto crackers, which isn't a whole lot, but their next one is going to be making pizza, which is absolutely perfect because it's just laying down layers. NASA is really looking at this because long-distance space travel, you need a long shelf life on the food you're sending. And if you can send dehydrated food, and all of these cartridges are dehydrated, you can mine asteroids for water, mix that with these cartridges to produce the food, and feed your colonization crew. A 30-year shelf life is awesome. This contractor is also thinking that this will help feed the human population at 12 billion people, taking the upper limit from 9.5 to 10 billion range to 12 billion by eliminating food waste and allowing on-demand food for anybody.
That is really interesting.
Yes.
No, I mean, for its implications as far as space travel. I'd hate to live in a world with 12 billion people that need to rely on that. I would rather see an answer to curbing our population than how to feed it at its max.
Oh, agreed. Either that or outsource people to other worlds.
Yes.
An experimental stem cell treatment has successfully brought sight back to a blind man. This is through...
First thing he did, watched porn.
Yes. His affected eye went from 2400 vision, which is legally blind, to 2040. That is an incredible improvement by using human embryonic stem cells on his retina.
I mean, 2040, that's enough to get a fucking driver's license.
Yes, it is. 2040 is enough to be corrected with contacts or glasses.
Oh, yeah.
This is okay. Fucking awesome.
Well, and this is what our opponents, I guess you'd say, are fighting against, tooth and nail.
Yeah.
All I have to say, you can't prove that Jesus brought sight to any blind people or hearing to any deaf people, but science has done both.
Fucking A.
If you want to look at what will save us, it is science.
You know, that brings an idea to mind. You know, you're talking about outsourcing humans to other worlds. And in our history, we tend to send the missionaries out to these new places throughout the age of colonialism. I think we should do that to other worlds, too, except just all of them, like every one of them, since all of them, all at once, to another world. We'll outsource all the missionaries. That, it won't curb our population as much as I'd like, but it'll curb a segment of our population as much as I'd like.
But the Catholics already have a doctrine that allows for evangelizing to other worlds.
And let them. Let all of them do it at the same time in the same fucking rocket that we send to wherever. I don't care.
Oh, god damn.
Hey, let them be somebody else's problem. I don't give a shit.
Oh, man.
Well, that's awfully selfish, Lamar.
All of the missionaries together. You know what? And of all denominations, let them argue about what the end message is going to be. I don't give a fuck.
All right, let's go ahead and move on and get back to science.
Yes. I might be able to finish these two before I got
to
drop off.
You don't need to bash religion and science. Science does a good job of bashing religion on its own. There has been a study done by various people, including John Cook. He was the one that started it. And it is actually, this paper is released on IOP Science under a Creative Commons license. I am so impressed that a scientific paper was released Creative Commons. You don't have to pay to get this, so I highly recommend at least reading the abstract. But you can read the whole fucking thing. So this is by John Cook and others. Et al. There we go. Yeah. They examined 11,944 climate studies abstracts from 1991 to 2011. And they were looking for the topics global climate change and global warming. They found that 66.4% expressed no position on whether or not people were involved in global warming. 32.6% endorsed anthropogenic climate change, and 0.7% rejected it. Additionally, 0.3% were uncertain about the cause of global warming. Now, so based on all of that, the abstracts that expressed a position ended up coming down to 97.1% endorsed human-caused global warming, and that's a huge percentage, 97.1. They then contacted the actual authors of these studies and asked them to self-rate their position, or self-rate the position of their papers on anthropogenic global warming. 97.2% endorsed the scientific consensus that people are responsible, or at least contributing, to global warming.
Billy Bob, Jack down the street doesn't believe that those guys are telling the truth, so fuck it all.
You know, the thing is, this is all a duh, right? I mean, this is stuff that we've talked about, not just on our show, but I mean, just together. You know, we've had these conversations before. Anybody that's reasonably scientifically literate, I don't know how much of an impact this particular paper is going to have. Hopefully, it will have enough of an impact to, I guess, curb some of the money that goes into the opposition. But I don't know if it's going to have the kind of impact that takes the conspiracy theorist stupidity off the street.
Well, the benefit I see of this paper, we've all been able to recognize the scientific consensus. This is actually quantifying that consensus. So now lobbyists that are going before Congress will have actual data of looking at all global climate change and global warming related papers. 97.2% of the authors think the data supports anthropogenic global warming. We need to fucking do something about this. This is just adding a little bit of ammo to their arsenal.
Right.
Don't matter. God ain't going to let it gonna happen. You see, we're going to end before it gets too warm, you see. No, well, you don't talk. It doesn't matter.
Eli, why the hell do you have to sound like the 21-year-old me?
God's going to take us all up to heaven before it gets a place warmer if it can't survive. It don't matter.
Now, the 23-year-old me had a little different take on it. It was, well, Revelation says God will destroy the earth by fire. Maybe this is just how he's doing it. He's just getting a head start.
Listen to that guy.
He's smart. Listen to that guy. He knows what he's talking about.
Do not listen to the old me. Listen to the new me.
Oh, man.
This bottle of wine is almost gone.
Oh, shit.
My time is
almost gone, and I've got a jet. I have other commitments, unfortunately. Her name is Alice. She's 6, and she's my boss. I want to say, really, thank you for having me on the show. It's great to talk to you guys. I'm really glad that you two have picked up this torch and are running with it. And you know, I'll try and come back sometime. You guys want me back, let me know. I know my schedule.
Oh, hell yeah.
But really, thank you guys a lot. Lamar, he's going to stick with you and keep dispensing the wit and the wisdom.
Oh, Eli, if nothing else, we need to have you on for that Bible trivia game.
The science Bible trivia, yes.
Yeah, we'll have to do that, absolutely.
Round two.
All right, you guys have a great evening.
Thanks for joining us.
You too, sir.
Later. And that was the Eli that no one ever got to hear before. Because on Chariots of Iron, he had a stick up his ass. But now he just doesn't.
Somebody has to.
Well, hey, if we're going to move on, I'm going to go grab a glass of wine.
Oh, go for it.
So you might want to edit out the silence after this now.
Yes.
So I will be back shortly. Okay.
NASA's Kepler spacecraft has done an incredible job of spotting more than 2,700 potential exoplanets, many of which have already been confirmed to be, well, very serious and likely candidates for exoplanets. It's had a number of malfunctions recently. A couple years ago, one of its gyroscopes went out, and then just a couple weeks ago, if even that, a second one went out. It went up with 4, and it needs 3 to maintain the precise focus on the targets it's looking at. And unless NASA can quickly repair one of those, just through, you know, what, SSHing into it, it's going to have to be reutilized for a different purpose, and its planet hunting days are over. Now, fortunately, it's already spotted 2,700 potentials, and it has produced so much data that very little has actually been analyzed. So in its, I think, 3 years of operation, it's already provided more than has ever been done before with the search for exoplanets.
That's cool. It'll be keeping people busy for a long time to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, aren't they looking at the possibility of keeping it alive?
Yes. Even if those gyroscopes don't come back online, they will reutilize it for something else that doesn't require as high of resolution and focus.
What would repairing a device like this look like now that the shuttle program is in?
I would imagine SSH... type in the IP address and start issuing commands.
Somebody's going to write a bash script that's going to just get everything back in order. You're going to get some like super fucking admin just typing out the wickedest script ever. So I'm thinking that that these kind of efforts are going to have to become international, but which is a good thing. I mean, that's a good thing.
There's not enough time for Kepler.
You really don't think so?
It's too valuable. It's too high quality. They're going to need to repurpose it before they'd have time to get something else there. We just don't have the launch capabilities and won't for quite a while. And I highly doubt NASA would be wanting to launch a Soyuz. You know, pay the money to launch a Soyuz craft just to that. We're only paying for Soyuz to go to the ISS. And so I really imagine it's just going to be remote access into it.
Cool.
That sound, I mean, I remote access isn't going to fix mechanical.
Well, assuming it is mechanical.
Okay, well, that's the assumption I'm working with after a drunk glossing over of the article.
Yes. Now, one thing to keep in mind, it's already been up for long enough, and the technology that gets sent up is already old enough, just based on the design and development and construction phases, that it's horribly obsolete. If they were to put in the cost to get somebody there to work on it and fix mechanical issues, it'd be cheaper or at least more cost-effective to build a new fucking satellite and send it up.
Sure.
And then they could just send it up on an Atlas V that we already own.
Yeah, have SpaceX put it up.
Or use SpaceX or somebody else.
Hmm. Well, so long, Kepler.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice knowing you. Maybe they can splash it down somewhere.
It still can be used for other purposes.
Sure, but it's not going to really be... I mean, with two gyros out, you're not going to really dial that thing in.
No, you're definitely not.
It's... I don't know. I mean, sure, they could come up with other ways to use it. I've just so been amazed by what it's produced so far.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of... When you say goodbye to something like that, it's like, God, it's done all this stuff so far. And in terms of, like, human lifetime and stuff, it hasn't been up that long. But I guess in terms of the pace of technology, maybe it is reaching end of life. And that's a fair point.
Yeah. Realistically, though, even if with only two gyros, what we'd probably have is a slightly lower quality version, or not even lower quality, probably something better than Hubble, just on a different spectrum.
Good enough. All right. Moving on.
Fucking A.
Okay.
There we go.
All right. You guys ready to move on to politics and religion?
By all means. Let's
all
do this. Lay it down quick.
This one's actually coming from Friendly Atheist. Hemet was kind enough to actually dig through the 2012 International Religious Freedom Report from the U.S. State Department. And with it, he has found a statement that says, 15 years ago, the U.S. Congress took a momentous step in support of religious freedom when it passed the International Religious Freedom Act, establishing within the executive branch the position of ambassador-at-large for international religious freedom. With this measure, the U.S. government made a bold statement on behalf of those who were oppressed, those who were persecuted, and those who were unable to live their lives at the most basic level, for the simple exercise of their faith, whether it be a single deity or multiple deities or no deities at all. Freedom to believe, including the freedom not to believe, is a universal human right. And in some speaking events, John Kerry, our Secretary of State, has also referenced the freedom to not believe. That's pretty fucking awesome.
It is awesome. And I'm stoked whenever, you know, public officials come out and say these kinds of things. And
yeah.
I don't know what kind of impact they're having at home, but I think there is some impact because things are getting better.
Yes. Okay, when the Secretary of State says the freedom to profess and practice one's faith, to believe or not to believe, or to change one's beliefs, that is the birthright of every human being, and that's what we believe.
Well, if you'll remember, not terribly long ago, the president-elect at the time, President Obama, included non-believers in a sort of group, if you will, when he was talking about, you know, faith, and I forget the exact situation, but this was before he was brought into office, and just his inclusion of non-believers when he was talking about people of faith in the United States, that was interesting. And
oh yeah, I kind of creamed my pants over that.
Yeah, we made a big deal about it on the show too. You know, when we were doing charity,
and I kind of cringed. I was still freshly not a card-carrying member of the Republican Party. I wouldn't cringe now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess. I guess we ran that show for a while because we were already doing the show during that season. So yeah, it was a big deal for us, and we made a big deal. I think the show was only, the Chariots of Iron, was only going for like 6 months.
Yes. Yes, that was pretty early.
It was probably almost another year before we got involved with you.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Alrighty, moving on. The U.S. Supreme Court announced on May 20 that it will hear a lawsuit challenging Christian sectarian invocations before town board meetings in Greece, New York.
I'm kind of scared about this one.
The lawsuit is being sponsored by Americans United, and they are urging the High Court to affirm government neutrality on religion. According to the Reverend Barry Lynn, a town council meeting isn't a church service, and it shouldn't seem like one. Government can't serve everyone in the community when it endorses one faith over others. That sends a clear message that some are second-class citizens based on what they believe about religion. Mm-hmm. The official records show that in the 11 years between 99 and 2010, two-thirds of the 120 recorded invocations reference Jesus Christ, Jesus, your Son, or the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. Second Circuit Court ruled against the town's prayer policy.
I'm still kind of afraid that the Supreme Court might actually rule in favor of it. Block on the benches is still a little scary.
I don't think they will, and I mean, I could be wrong. I'm often wrong, but it's the thing about it is when something like this happens, the best thing that can happen is getting support from the quote unquote faith community, and they have it here. Churches and pastors and people of faith, even though I hate that term, I really do. people of faith, meaning everybody but us, often, there are groups out there that are liberal-minded, that are very inclusive, and they stand up for the rights of unbelievers. They do, like this guy, Reverend Lynn. And they often stand up for the rights of homosexuals, against, religious bigotry. So when you have that kind of support, the courts have a more difficult time telling them to fuck off. Now, if the only people that were bitching about this was, Freedom From Religion Foundation and the ACLU, well, good luck, right? But now that you've got, but when you actually have people in the faith community saying, no, if you're going to endorse a specific religion, other people of other faiths get excluded, mm-hmm. and they get to use Jewish and Muslim communities, Hindu communities. None of these people give a damn about your, ending a prayer in the name of Jesus or the Holy Ghost. So they don't want any of that because it does exclude them. It doesn't just exclude us as atheists. It excludes a great number of religious affiliation.
Now,
so I don't think that the Supreme Court is going to.
When you look at the makeup of the Supreme Court, it's 6 Catholics and 3 Jews. Those 3 Jews would be alienated by Christian prayers.
That's correct.
And if you've got them in their determinations, and 3 of the 9 say, those prayers alienate me,
mm-hmm.
that would sway at least 3 of the other 6.
Yes, I certainly think so. I certainly think so.
You're not going to get Clarence Thomas, but they might be able to pull over, the Chief Justice.
Roberts maybe.
Roberts and Scalia, they could pull over to their side, at least.
I don't think they'd get Scalia. I think Scalia's a little too pissed right now.
Yeah?
Look, and Clarence Thomas may surprise you.
Have you guys heard about the brouhaha that Scalia just put out today?
Mm-mm.
The Boy Scouts, just recently said that, They will finally let gay boys be in the troops. Not scout leaders, not atheists, but at least gay boys as scouts. And Scalia, after 47 years, resigned as a scoutmaster today or yesterday. So I think he might be a little pissy about stuff like this.
But yet, when you look at how...
This is a different thing, though. It might be, but
he's. I think he's a little bit... I mean, that's God and country and apple pie to him right here.
Wait, though. The Boy Scouts already has policies in place when it comes to endorsing religion, for example. The Boy Scouts, as a group, as a whole, doesn't endorse Christianity. They just endorse faith in God in the kind of in a only a slightly stronger way than, 12-step program, okay? It's very generic. It's
a couple notches generic. Above ceremonial deism.
Exactly. So it's a sort of generic concept. We want you to believe in God because faith is important to your moral character and shit like that, right? I don't think he's going to get on the bandwagon of suppressing other people of faith by allowing, the town council to have these definitely Christian prayers. he would probably be on our side on this, even if he's not on our side on issues of allowing homosexuals in the voice.
Now, if you look at Scalia's arguments and or not arguments, his, let me rephrase that to be more proper, his questioning in the DOMA case, and I actually did listen to all of that, he definitely takes the Constitution very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
He was, in that case, he was very concerned about the federalism issue, that the federal government should not be deciding what is a marriage and what isn't. The same way, while he might see a private organization like the Boy Scouts should be able to decide how they view, you know, gay scouts, he would have a much different take on how the government views prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree.
I actually agree with him on his interpretation of the, even though, I mean, I'm far more of a federalist, it's not due to my interpretation of the Constitution. I mean, he's clearly right on limitation of federal powers.
Yes.
But, I mean, I am more of a federalist insofar as I'll say the Constitution is a bit dated. And we do need federal powers saying, no, you can't just corral all the homos in your state. The federal government needs to be able to step in and say, okay, yes, this is beyond our constitutional reach, but you guys are assholes.
All they have to do is incorporate homosexuality as a class protected under the 14th Amendment.
Certainly.
And then it's done.
Well, in the same for, you know, a great number of things, but then we're talking expansion of federal powers. And in fact, the 14th Amendment is an expansion of federal powers. All new amendments post the original document are expansions of power. So,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with the continual expansion of power insofar as the government's looking out for people getting shit on by the state. I guess it's probably the way to put it. Not the classiest way to put it.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. In the state of Texas, the subcommittees in both the House and Senate have passed or passed on bills, referred to the main bodies. Bills that would remove gender restrictions in their Romeo and Juliet affirmative defense to the prosecution of indecency with a child. And what that means is, and I was just going to read from the background listed on the Equality Texas page. Heavy petting is classified as a crime for minors under Texas law. It is classified as indecency with a child. Currently, there is an affirmative defense to prosecution for age-appropriate dating if the two people involved are both over the age of 14, are within 3 years of each other's age, and contact was consensual, and the people are of the opposite sex. This defense is not currently available for gay and lesbian kids. This bill would make the affirmative defense of age-appropriate dating available to all young couples, not just straight kids.
Mm-hmm.
The Texas House on April 23 passed this bill on to the Texas House Criminal Jurisprudence Committee passed this on to the main body of the House with a 5-3 vote. And the Texas Senate voted favorably 4-1 in their Criminal Justice Committee on a very similar bill.
Right. These Romeo and Juliet defenses is really for what would normally, in some states, is classified as a sexual crime. So if you're over the age of consent and have a girlfriend or a boyfriend who is under the age of consent, even though you're close in age, you know, you're 18 and your girlfriend's 16, the Romeo and Juliet helps clear you.
Mm-hmm.
So allowing this for gay, because they're not going to be able to prostitute two minors anyway. So allowing this for gays is kind of, it's a huge step.
Yes.
It's a huge step in social acceptance, legal acceptance. And the toughest age to be gay is your teenage years. As an adult, it can still be tough. But you have, or hopefully have, the wherewithal and the means to get the fuck out of your circumstance. You know, when you're a teenager, especially if you're living in an unaccepting home, maybe a strict religious background or whatever, and you actually connect with someone you can relate to, and you have that dating experience as a teenager that we all have, that we all got to take part in, that's really big and it's really important in your life. And to have that kind of, to have to worry that you don't have any defense if there is that at least 1 year gap it's probably a huge concern. And doing this, it allows us as a society, allows Texas as a society to move one step closer to just accepting like gay people are here. They're a part of our lives. Gay teenagers are here. They're going to date. And there's really nothing we can do about it. This to me is very important. This one step. I think if we can just make life easier, simpler, and more normalized for gay teenagers, the world would be better. You know?
Yes, definitely.
It's awkward enough for everybody. That's already a fucked up time in your life for everybody. My teenage years were fun and all that good stuff, but it's still kind of discovering yourself and you know, finding out who you really are and finding out who you really like and all those kind of things. So no, this is huge. This is probably, in my opinion, the biggest news item that you've got in your notes here.
Now, we're just hoping that this actually gets a vote this year.
And given that the rest of your news items are all about lesbians,
don't judge us, man.
Yeah, no, I have to, man. All of this, everything else is about, the rest of the show is about lesbians.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was a nice intro.
Okay, when you look at what's going on right now in this country, we have reached that pivotal point where the religious right is fighting so hard against gays, and the gay rights movement is winning. Mm-hmm. And they're in the death throes right now.
Wait, well, the important thing to notice here is that liberalism all through history wins a slow victory, and it will continue to win a slow victory. And we just have to be patient and keep fighting, but patience will lose.
Yeah, and we're the atheist nomads, not the gay nomads. Every single one of us is straight, and yet we think that gay rights is a huge fucking deal.
Not just, yeah, exactly. It is a huge deal. And it's not just huge to gays. Like, it is huge to everyone. Acceptance helps normalize society. You can't take groups of people and treat them like, they're freaks or outcasts or, you know, abominations of nature. You can't have a normalized society. Like, you can't have a happy, healthy society.
Not at all. I think it goes even bigger than that. It's, or maybe smaller than that, but the religious right has majorly planted their flag on this issue.
That's true.
When we win, they're dead. They might try to come back, but they are going to be so much smaller, so marginalized, they will be recognized by the majority of Americans as the bigots that they truly are.
Homosexuality has been one of their big, banners to rally the troops under, you know, with all the saber rattling. If you look at the last decade of election cycles, when they would rally the troops over the state ballots with gay marriage, right?
Yeah.
They would use homosexuality to pull all of their voter base out to just vote conservative across the board. And it works. And it still works. It actually still does, except they're beginning to be outnumbered. You know, kids are turning 18 every day, right? Kids are turning 18 every day, and they can vote now. And newer generations are just wiser about this stuff.
Oh, just look at Minnesota. They brought a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage on the ballot. It failed. And what have they done now? They have passed marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
That is incredible. The attempt to rally the troops against the liberals backfired on them in Minnesota.
Right. But, you know, the funny thing is Oregon. I live in Oregon. Very liberal state. Okay. Very liberal. But there's a large enough conservative pool here to swing the vote sometimes. And 9 years ago, in the 2004 election cycle, we had gay marriage on the ballot, and we banned it. But that was 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. If it were to go right now, gay marriage clearly passed. If it goes, let's say, any time after 2010 to right now, any time in that time frame, it would be a passing ballot.
Yes,
but. You know, that's what we're playing with. We're playing with time. We're playing with new generations coming forward. We're playing with a few changed minds not a lot from the hard conservative right, but we're going to start seeing that sweep. In less than 10 years, this is going to be a non-issue. Gay marriage will be a non-issue. Gay rights will still be an issue, but it's something that would be worked out very easily.
Kind of like how...
You have to remember, in some states right now, it's still legal to discriminate against homosexuals for housing, for jobs.
I live in one.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Idaho has been... It's been on the legislative agenda every year for like the last 5 years. It finally got a reading in 2012.
Mm. Wow.
It won't see debate for probably another 5 or 6 years. Now, we do have... You know, Boise just passed or is considering a city ordinance protecting the LGBT community from discrimination. Pocatello is doing the same thing right now. They're doing a really twisted thing with adding, you know, tacking onto it an ID requirement for bathrooms, where you can be requested by any citizen to show ID in your bathroom, and if your gender on your ID does not match the restroom you're in, you can get fined.
Okay.
That is bizarre.
Yes. That is a conservative mayor seeing this is going to pass. So what can we do to make it backfire on them and make it fail? Ah, here's what we can do. No, it's just backfiring on the mayor.
Yeah, you know what? I think that rights for transgendered is going to take longer. It's just going to take longer. It's a much more difficult sell.
Yeah. LG and B.
The problem is, it's hard for people of that mindset of the far right conservative, generally highly religious mindset to understand that you are your brain with all of its flaws and with all of its glory. You are your brain. And if your brain is telling you that you're not the same gender that you see when you look in your pants, then it's your body that's wrong. You know, you are your brain.
Yeah.
And so, but trying to explain that transgendered people really do, I mean, they're already suffering from all kinds of other pressures from society to make legal hurdles. Well, fuck me. That's just insane. And to require ID?
Okay, let's just...
To require ID. I mean, I would be fucking offended. Seriously, I'm crazy offended. You know, to have to show any private citizen my fucking ID.
Let's bring this down to terms they'll understand. You go out, and you're at the store, and you need to take a piss. Oh, shit, I can't pee right now. I forgot my ID. Or,
right.
Pocatello, lots of Mormons there. Mom's out with her kids. Her son's too young for her to feel safe letting him go to the men's restroom by himself. So she takes him into the women's restroom. Oh, crap, he doesn't have any ID, and he's in the wrong bathroom. Are you going to find them? Are you going to find the 13-year-old that doesn't have ID yet?
Yeah, I don't know.
This is very much not only anti-transgender, it is anti-family.
Well, it's anti-personal privacy. Yeah. This is some... You are basically giving the rights to private citizens to...
If nothing else, detain others.
Well, every citizen has the right to do a citizen's arrest.
Sure.
Well, basically, I don't know. I mean, you're basically giving the rights to private citizens to circumvent the Fourth Amendment when, you know, when dealing with other private citizens, so long as they're in a fucking bathroom.
Yeah. All right.
As long as you're in the fucking bathroom, the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply. You just get to fucking check paper now, you know.
Keep in mind, this is Idaho, and we are famous for Larry Craig. All right, let's go ahead and move on. We've still got 2.5 stories to cover.
Oh, God. Okay.
What if I told you there was this couple that met in high school? One was 17, and the other was 15. Well, one turns 18 and gets charged with lewd and lascivious battery of a child 12 to 16 years old a few months after that birthday. By and large, everyone in the country would say, that is ridiculous. Why would you do that to that 18-year-old boy? Well, that's the twist in the story. It's Caitlin Hunt, an 18-year-old lesbian or bisexual girl who, at 17, was dating another member of the team she was playing on, a basketball team.
Actually, metaphorically and literally.
Yes, who was 15 years old. Caitlin turned 18. her girlfriend's parents waited a few months and then pressed charges on this felony, lewd and lascivious battery of a child 12 to 16 years old. Caitlin was arrested. She was expelled from her school. She had to finish up high school at an alternative school.
Can I tell you my take here?
Yeah.
I don't think that her parents did this because she was dating a girl. I think her parents did this because they found out she was having sex.
Well, if you look at the media attention this has gotten, and yeah, sure, some of it's probably not all that.
No, I'm being dead serious. I mean, we can go with the media attention, but if this were a boy, first off, they knew about the relationship when they were both underage.
Mm-hmm.
And they let the relationship go. I mean, they didn't stop it. They didn't hinder it. I don't think they ever cared that their daughter was gay. But when they found out that their daughter was having sex, they probably had a change of heart. Not about her sexuality, but about her having sex at all. And if Caitlin were a boy, and they found out that, you know, their daughter boyfriend was having sex with her, I think they would have had the same sort of knee-jerk reaction. Because that shit happens all the time.
Not in Florida. At least not in that part of Florida. This has gotten the attention it's gotten. One thing that's come out in it is that the girlfriend's parents blame Caitlin for turning their daughter gay. And that that's a law that's on the books that doesn't get enforced in cases like this. Of course, an irate parent definitely allows the cops to do something about it, but it is very atypical.
Mm. You know, even given that, I think that part of me is saying that their parents or her parents are, yes, okay, they could be reacting to be lesbian, but they had plenty of time to do that. Part of me thinks that they're using whatever tools are necessary because they just freaked out when they found out their daughter was sexually active.
My take on it.
But that's because I'm an idiot.
My only question is, since the parents waited 2 or 3 months to press charges?
Yeah.
Why aren't they getting charged with being accessories to the crime?
Ouch. What? What? No, I get you. They certainly knew about it. It wasn't a secret. It's not like they just all of a sudden found out when Caitlin turned 18. So yeah, there'd be questions there. But that's going to be overshadowed by all of their bitching and whining. So,
and
seriously, I think it's because they found out their 15-year-old daughter was put out. Dude, seriously, I think that's what it is. I swear to you. I think that the whole, you know, Caitlin turned our daughter gay thing is just whatever is going to make this, you know, whatever's going to make my 15-year-old girl stop fucking is going to work. Then we're going to go with that. I mean, we've known too many people like that. We have been boyfriends of girls in high school. Everybody here, right?
Yep. No.
Wesley's still a boyfriend of a girl in high school.
So, I never was. I had a very sad and pathetic teenage years. When you talk about misspent youths, I definitely had one.
Right, but you're making up for it by misspending your girlfriend's youth. It's okay.
She's 28!
No, what I'm saying here is that when parents find out that this is generally just with girls, it really is a double standard, and I feel bad for girls in this spot. But when parents find out that their daughter is having sex, especially if she's at a young age, they lose their shit, and it just does not matter at that point what excuse they use. You know, oh, this girl turned my daughter gay. You know, whatever it is. I don't know. I don't think that her parents are legit homophobes. I think that her parents just freaked out because they found out her daughter was sick. Yeah. Even though the article that you sent me doesn't say that they were having sex, necessarily.
There's so many articles out there. I just want the most local one.
Sure, and that's fine. That's fine. I barely read that one. That's fine.
Wow. Lamar, I am so impressed that you're bringing your A game tonight.
Oh, man. Well, Eli and I both worked like really late every day this week, you know, and today we got out early at like 5 p.m. So, but in any case, I barely read over any of this. But this sounds so much like just that knee-jerk reaction of parents find out their daughter's screwing.
Now, regardless...
And you know what? You're going to get a lot of email from people that think I'm an idiot. And that's fine.
I would welcome it.
I've always welcomed it. I've gotten email from all kinds of people.
Okay, so...
Obviously, all of them were douchebags, but...
They're all assholes.
What I am going to say is, regardless of the details of this case, that Romeo and Juliet defense they've got in Texas, there's very similar things on the books in places like Washington and Idaho and many other states where age-appropriate relationships are either legal or, at worst, a misdemeanor, not felonious. Those are definitely important. A 2-year age gap, and then you have a birthday, so say 2.5 years, that's not age inappropriate by any means. Mm-hmm. And any of those defenses do need to be gender neutral.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Whether it's a 18-year-old girl, or excuse me, a 17-year-old girl dating a 15-year-old boy, and then she turns 18, that shouldn't be a crime. A 17-year-old boy dating a 15-year-old girl who then turns 18, that should not be a crime.
No, you're absolutely right.
If they're both boys or they're both girls, that should not be a crime.
Shouldn't even come up. Interesting side note to this case, though. What is it? Indian River County Sheriff Daryl Lohr should be getting a very rude awakening from Anonymous pretty soon, too. I don't know if you guys have heard about that, but... Yeah, it looks like there's a petition that Anonymous is planning to deliver with at least 200,000 signatures on it, and calling for the resignation of one or more of the authorities involved with Caitlin's case. So I thought that was kind of cool too.
I don't much care for Anonymous by and large, but in this case, cool.
Every once in a while, they do some pretty cool shit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think what Anonymous has done is turned protesting into a more streamlined, large event thing. So you can take a small local event now, and Anonymous, if it gets, you know, in the right radar, it can blow up. And we need that kind of reaction. And now, with the world being as small as it is, with everything being so interconnected, we're all online. Look at the way that we're doing this podcast right now. Having that kind of mobility on protesting civil rights issues like this is really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's really powerful. I don't know how well the Anonymous protest spills over to normal folks. I live in Portland, Oregon. It's hard for me to put a real gauge on what middle America thinks of an Anonymous protest. Probably not favorable. I have no idea. But it does get attention to the subject.
Right.
You know, and it makes this, since a large group gets involved and does a large protest, it makes this a real national story. And that's what's important. That's what they do right. Even if they did everything else wrong, this would be what they did right.
Alrighty. Moving on. A Republican judge in Texas, and yes, judges in Texas are partisan positions apparently, made a ruling in a divorce proceeding that stated that Carolyn Compton gets custody of her two children, but she cannot have anybody who she's not related to by blood or marriage in her home past 9 p.m., assuming her children are present. This is all part of a morality clause put in the divorce papers. And what this really means is that her girlfriend of 3 years has 30 days to move out of their home, or they lose custody of the kids.
You know, they just need to fucking move. Now, this is so horribly wrong. I know that the father doesn't have the same stipulations, right?
Yeah,
right.
Say again?
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so if he has a girlfriend, whatever, the kids will go straight back. It doesn't matter what he's... In other words, it doesn't matter who daddy's fucking, right? It doesn't matter. Well, as long as it's not a guy.
Yeah, definitely.
But otherwise, there's no morality law stipulation on the father. It's more than just an anti-gay law. This is a very sexist position this judge is taking.
Well, let's take it a step further.
If you were to remove that she... Now, I know the judge made this decision based on the fact that she has a girlfriend. Okay, I get it. If she was dating a man, the judge would not take this same position. I get that. But this is a judge, regardless of who anybody's dating post-separation, this is a judge that is saying that you, woman, do not get to have anyone in your house not related to you after a certain time of day. You lose the kids to daddy, who I'm not going to put any of those restrictions on.
It gets worse. You said they should move. When you get a custody hearing, a custody decision, typically it includes that you cannot leave the state. I work with a woman that, based on her divorce, she cannot take a promotion in another state without getting court approval and her ex-husband sign off because she has primary custody. He's free to work in Utah all he wants, but she can't leave state lines without court approval.
See, there's where she fucked up. She should have done what my first wife did. Take the kid, move, then file for divorce, see? then it just works out.
All right.
And that wraps up the news.
Yay.
We effectively got all of the interview done in the intro.
Yeah.
We are at 2 hours and 19 minutes on my recorder.
I've got 2:32 on mine.
With any luck... And this is very slim. We'll have new theme music by the time this is released. I'm going to be a little bit crunched on editing because I am headed to the coast this weekend.
Cool.
But at least in episode, you know, the second or third episode of season two, we will have new theme music. We are working on ideas on people to do the voiceovers for those. It's going to have a little different sound to it. It's going to be pretty cool.
Sweet.
And I can much easier ask somebody else to shamelessly promote us and ask you to give us money than I can do that myself, at least with less than a bottle of wine in me.
Very nice.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
Okay, hit end call before moving the headset. Moving on. English Standard is my preferred version based on my study of biblical languages and study of English translations, it is the best. I still have my pocket ESV that I was using for preaching those last couple of years. That is my go-to Bible if I have to look something up.